to Aussie Tech Heads, podcasting live from the Secret Hub Studios on the Gold Coast, Australia. Sit back, relax, and listen for a while. Who knows? You might learn something.
Welcome everyone, episode 478 Aussie Tech Heads, another week, yes, of tech news aplenty. We are brought to you by athwebhosting.com.au. How do you like the new webpage? Looking good? Get into some web hosting in there and check it all out. There's a lot of information and just, go for gold. Go for gold. All right, this is, we are recording on the 10th of March, 2016. And, we've got another great show for you this week. Don't forget to you can listen to us on the AussieTechRadio.com. Just dial up the TuneIn Radio app and search for Aussie Tech Radio. You'll be right there. 24/7 podcast, tech podcast from Australia and New Zealand. And also contact us Facebook.com and YouTube.com/AussieTechHeads. Now, this week we are joined by the usual three. It's getting to be the usual three. So let's go to Stuart. Hi, Stuart. How you doing?
Hey Glenn, how are you? I'm good.
Not too bad, thanks. How did the daughter's birthday party go?
Went really well because I did that escape room thing.
That's right.
That my wife was a bit worried about. She said that, do you think that this is really going to suit sort of 11-year-old girls? Is it just a bit too techie?
Too much?
It was just sort of escape from Mars type sort of thing. Anyway, the girls absolutely loved it and they had a great time. So
right.
It was great.
Well, I've got my 10th birthday tomorrow. Saturday. Well, she's actually 10 tomorrow, but the birthday party's on Saturday. But I'm not doing no escape room. That's just a normal party.
Oh, you should do an escape room, Glenn. You put them in a room and you leave them there.
And then I escape.
Yes. And you escape, exactly.
Yeah. We've got 11 little girls coming.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks. All right, and as that was Eric. Hi, Eric. How you doing?
Hello, Glenn. Hello, gents. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Another busy week. And
Always busy. I don't know if I'm busy or disorganized. I'm trying to work that out.
Yeah, I reckon that's the same here. I reckon I might be a bit of the latter for me. And
I think lately, the latter. I just can't seem, you sort of keep spinning in that wheel, but you think, what do I get done today?
Yeah, well, I sort of got stuck through the week when the dog went charging around the place and tipped over the shredded box of paper. And I still haven't recovered from it. There's shredded paper everywhere. I need to vacuum. All right. And Shane, how you doing?
Good, good, good. Busy week.
Yeah. What, legs? Still got legs?
I've got the cellulitis jump from the left leg to the right leg and knocked me around again earlier on in the week, but seemed to be over the hump with that. And couple of job interviews. Nice. Had one last Tuesday before I got crook. And had second interview with them on this Tuesday. I was supposed to find out today whether I'd got the job or not, but still nothing. So I'm going with the no news is good news. Last week, I went and bought myself another new toy. Bought a label maker. You can tell that it's a label maker because it's got label maker labeled on the bottom.
Did you forget what your name is?
I bought a label maker. I'd have bought a label maker once. You know what annoyed me the most about it? And you can tell us if yours is the same, Shane, but it took five pencil batteries. I hated it.
This one only takes four, so you don't have to buy the extra pack to get the extra one.
God.
Now tell me, Shane, what's the leg condition that you've got?
Cellulitis. It's basically it's just a skin infection, but the doctors tell me that the symptoms kind of show up in the leg, especially in the lower leg, because that's kind of in your body, that's where
is that a bacterial infection?
Yeah. Right. So I was put on antibiotics the second time around. It's putting up a bit more of a fight, so I was put on some antibiotics, intravenous antibiotics. They jumped that up to two jabs a day. About 3 days into it, I came out in a big rash everywhere because when I was a kid, when I had penicillin, I had like a rash that came out, and
I'm allergic to penicillin too.
Yeah, I didn't realise that this antibiotic was penicillin based, but I've had other penicillin based antibiotics in the past, and nothing's happened. But I think because
it's a heavy dose, though, you got to get something else.
Exactly. So they've put me on some other stuff now. So they've taken me off of the IV, which is good. So no more needles. I've just got to have like about 9 antibiotic tablets a day. Just
did they say? Did they doctors say how you get that sort of condition?
They're honing in on potentially diabetes, especially because one of the blood results that I had over the last couple of weeks, that particular marker was kind of borderline. Okay. But they don't know whether it was borderline because of all the other crap that's going on in my body, or
right,
because
you'll have to do another test.
Yeah, I've got that lined up. But the other exciting thing that's happened to me this week, the highlight of the week, is that yesterday I got the NBN connected.
Oh, you're a turd. Yeah. See you later.
That's what I said. I said something very similar, but can't be repeated. But yeah, so go on.
So it's working, is it? Show us your speed test.
What's your speed test?
Go on. Let me do one now.
Do one, and then share the screen.
Now, I just clarify for the purposes of transparency that I just flashed up some pictures of cellulitis. That wasn't Shane's leg, okay? And I hope you're not watching the show while you're eating tea.
That was a woman's leg, wasn't it?
Yes.
I didn't know Shane shaved his legs, or I didn't know they were pink.
No, I just Googled a couple. But anyway. All right, so Shane's doing a speed test. How's it going? He told me he was getting, 100 down and 38 up or something. It's just absolutely mind-blowing.
You're the most annoying person on the internet as of now, officially.
Yeah.
Currently it's hovering around 83 down. I've got all this other stuff going on. And then up.
Oh, please.
Up is 30.
Oh, God, that's enough.
Yeah, that's enough.
Oh, let's 30, just see what I'm getting, shall we?
Well, we 36
know
up.
We know what you're going to get.
36 up.
You get 37 up.
Yeah, okay.
36. I would kill for 5 up.
I know. I think
36.
What do you get, Stuart? You're on the cable, but you're slow at night, aren't you? Because of Netflix direction.
Yeah, it's just a bit variable, actually. Well, actually, you know, House of Cards has just come back onto Netflix season 4.
I've just binge-watched the whole series. It's brilliant. I just finished it this afternoon.
Nice.
I've
only watched 2 episodes.
Is this guy a piece of work or what?
I don't watch it.
Yeah, well, he always has been, hasn't he? But, oh, it's a great show. But I had...
Anyway,
I used you'll Netflix.
Love it. Binge-watched 10 episodes on the trot.
I've got...
I've just put it in the chat.
Right, well, I'm getting... Thanks for asking. All and right. Look at that.
Hang on, Stuart was telling us his speed.
Yeah, no, it's 2.5 up normally, so yeah. It's fairly consistent. 2.5 up, so it's
well,
it's okay.
I'm sitting on 5.
It's better than 1,
which is annoying.
Yeah, well, mine's look at that. I don't know if I can show that off Shane's, but yes, I have got proof that it is 83.4 up and 37.28 down. Rightio. Well, Shane's the new...
You mean the other way around?
No, down 83.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that what I said? Did I say it the other way around? Sorry.
Yeah. 83 up. I'd kill for that too.
Yeah. So Shane's going to be the designated streamer from now on once we go back live on the live broadcast. All right. Well, let's start getting into some of this stuff. Let's go with... Oh, look, I'll probably have one here. There was one I thought very interesting through the week. Apparently, it's been called the first known Mac ransomware. And obviously, target Apple because it's a Mac. Now, the Palo Alto Threat Intelligence Director, Ryan Olson, said that the Keranger malware, malware, which appeared on Friday, was the first functioning ransomware attacking Apple Mac computers. So, look, I don't think everyone's going to get it. It's only been coming through a site called transmissionbt.com, which I don't know. Have you heard of that, Eric?
No.
So it's
like, I have. Yeah.
Oh, all right. So it's a BitTorrent peer-to-peer thing for the Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently
it's a pretty well-known one. It's a very well-known BitTorrent client. So it's not obscure at all.
Yeah. Okay. An Apple representative said that the company had taken steps over the weekend to prevent attacks by revoking a digital certificate from a legitimate Apple developer that enabled the rogue software to install itself onto the Macs. Now, for whatever reason, when you use this transmission software, it put this the ransomware onto your machine, and then it wasn't activated for 3 days. So, you know, you're going away, or, you know, you go away, you watch all your movies and whatever you got, and then 3 days later, bang, encryption time, encryption town. It carries a warning, so saying that this is transmissionbt.com now, has got a warning saying that version 2.9 of its Mac software had been infected with the malware, and you should, if you are using it, make sure you are at version 2.91. It also provided technical information on how users could check to see if they're infected. Bad luck if you are infected, I think. I think that's end of the day once you get one of those. So has anyone here ever been ransomwared? Or are we just too smart
for that?
No. No. I've seen it. No. We all seen it?
I've seen it pop up before. I've seen it many times pop up, and you know, on the, it's a web page if I'm going to a particular site, and it says your computer is infected, click here now, right? And you think, yeah, rightio, sure, piss off.
Look, I saw it in a, I got called out to do a job, and yeah, they had it. I think it was the crypto locker one, the original and best. And so what had happened was the machine just still worked okay. Like, everything was fine. It was snappy. You know, everything was fine. As soon as you went open up a Word document or something, it would say, don't know what you're doing. What are you trying to do? Not in a known format. Once you started looking in through the files and everything, all the Word documents, instead of the .doc or .docx, they were all like .doc.encrypt. Like this, they all had this encrypt extension put on them, and apparently that just went right. It went through the whole system, just doing photos, documents, just like user data, and then it also went through to any other computer that was connected to that computer on the network. So it just went through the whole place, and we just had to get all the data back from backups. Luckily,
hang on a minute, Stuart, you have a new microphone. Is this correct?
It's the same one as last week. It's just the vocal mic I use in the band, actually. So I thought that would sound better.
I thought you were using a headset once before.
I was 2 weeks ago, the first time I came on.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
But it wasn't quite
sound,
as good.
This is good, voice quality. Good sound.
Yeah.
Good sound.
It is good. All right. Eric, what have you brought us this week? You find anything
exciting? Yes. Microsoft Surface Book ads borrow music from Apple to focus on things a Mac just can't do.
Okay.
Following the launch of a few ads focused around the advantages of Windows 10 over Macs, this week Microsoft continued its campaign with new commercials showcasing the Microsoft Surface Book. The ads feature wildlife photographer, blah, 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 blah. And the first video showcases Flack's initial impressions of the Surface Book, with the photographer commenting on the detail provided by the 2-in-1 laptop/tablet device. Flack also detaches the top half of the Surface Book to directly edit and manipulate his photographs. He ends the video stating, "I can't do that on my Mac."
Take
it out.
Take that. Now, why'd they borrow music from Apple? What was that part about?
Well, no, not music from Apple. You know, Apple didn't own the music. They used the same music that Apple used.
Oh, I see. Right.
In their past ads.
Yes, right.
Right. So people can associate, because everyone can associate an Apple ad with music. Right?
Yes.
So they think, look, there's an ad. Hang on a minute. They're slagging off Apple. So that's a bit of a guerrilla marketing. Very clever.
Mm. Do you know another thing that I don't actually like about the Macs, and I don't know if you get this same, Eric, but they've got no like hard drive light, LED. Like, the machine could just be sitting there frozen.
No, there is no hard. No, you're right. There is. That doesn't bother me. What do you want a hard drive light for?
Well, I want to know if the machine's doing anything.
I've got a flash drive. Doesn't worry me.
Yeah, I like lights. I like LEDs. All right.
That doesn't worry me.
All right. Okay, Shane, what's been going on in Perth? Any local Perth stories? Not this week?
Not this week, no. I've got a Microsoft story that I was going to follow on from that Microsoft story with.
Yeah, go.
Just in, you know, just with continuity. Microsoft is going after Comcast in order to unmask the person behind the infringing IP address, which activated thousands of Microsoft product keys stolen from Microsoft's supply chain. Microsoft wants the court. Apparently, what's happened is it's a whole bunch of IPs, a whole bunch of product keys have gone missing from Microsoft, and because Microsoft can obviously track the authentication process or the activation process where it's coming from, it's noticed that it's come. Thousands of them came from one single IP address. So anyway, Microsoft wants the court to issue a subpoena, which will force Comcast or any ISP reseller to hand over the pirating subscribers' info. From 2012 to 2015, Microsoft maintains that an IP assigned to Comcast pinged its servers in Washington over 2,000 times during the software activation process. As Torrent Freak points out, Microsoft complaint filed in the federal court in Washington states, cyber forensics allows Microsoft to analyze billions of activations of Microsoft software and identify activation patterns and characteristics that make it more likely than not that the IP address associated with the activations is an address through which pirated software is being activated. So basically, it's analyzed these patterns and has determined that it's not just a normal activation or a volume licensing kind of situation activation. It's more than likely being pirated software. So that's why it's jumping up and down. And it would be a significant gaffe on behalf of the alleged pirates if the IP address data pointed directly to their real identity. So basically, they haven't done anything in the way of going through proxy servers or anything to hide what they were doing.
Wouldn't you think Microsoft would just shut those keys down, though? Or is there just too many? You think they just shut them down?
Well, if there's thousands of them, you think they would.
Yeah. I was talking to Microsoft today. Representative, you know, the little Indian or Filipino dude that you can hardly hear on a crackling Skype VoIP phone line. And I asked him, I had to activate a machine and it didn't auto-activate, so I had to ring him, you know, go through the whole process. And I just said to him, oh, listen, can I use the Windows 7 key on a clean install of Windows 10? And he said, yes. So I thought you could, but I tried it just previously because that's what I was installing. I was trying to activate 7 on a machine that had already been up to 10. But he said I could, so I might give that a shot and see if you can actually do that. It'd be interesting. And but Windows 10, like, what was the software that was done? It would have been Windows 2012 to 2015, probably Windows 7, something like that.
Yeah, it's probably what they started at. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's how the cookie crumbles, isn't it? I think that's how it goes. All right, Stuart, what have you brought us this week?
Well, we all probably heard that that John English passed away today, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But also earlier this week, we had some other people pass away in the IT field. The first one is Ray Tomlinson, who was the inventor of the email, apparently. Ray Tomlinson, widely credited with inventing email as we know it, has died from a suspected heart attack at 74. He established the first networked email system on ARPANET, using the familiar user at host format that's still in use today. And his choice of the at symbol for email popularized a once niche character, making it synonymous with all things internet. So he certainly had a lasting impact.
Yeah, apparently that at character, it was a little known or little used character in publishing or something. And I don't know, like, I've always known it to mean at, but in different languages, that symbol means different things. Like, I was reading another article, not the one that you've got here, and it was something like in another language, I don't know, like, say, Hindu or something, for example, that it meant worm, and you could probably see why it meant worm, you know, because it looked like probably a worm. But yeah, it meant different things, and so he used it as the at, which was totally just, it was just made for it, wasn't it? Yeah, so that's exactly what it went on to mean. At that domain. Yeah, so 74 heart attack. No good, eh? That's no good. Now, sure, you've got another sad story. You're full of sad stories tonight.
No, well, the second person, Tony Dyson, was the creator of R2-D2, has passed away as well.
Yeah.
And he's most widely known as the person who constructed the R2-D2 used on the sets of Star Wars in 1977. Originally designed by concept artist Ralph McQuarrie, R2-D2, a shining example of practical movie props, went on to be a major feature in every single Star Wars movie since then.
Yeah, right. In every single one. Interesting.
That's right.
Yeah. Are you a Star Wars fan?
Oh, absolutely. Who isn't?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mind them. I like the last one the best.
I have a fun fact about R2-D2.
Oh, did you?
Apparently, only a number of, like a select amount of people have the ability or qualifications to drive R2-D2. And one of those people is the Asian guy off Mythbusters.
Oh, right. So is it, it's not like someone inside it, it's an actual robot. Is that right?
Well, originally it was both, wasn't it? Because it was a small person was originally an R2-D2 for some of the shots.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But the reason why George Lucas had these two robots in all of his movies was he was actually kind of paying tribute to this old Japanese film where there were these two characters that were always in it in a kind of a slapstick sort of a way. It was this old Japanese classic film, and he basically copied that with these two robots that were in all of his films.
Yeah, I suppose you could probably see that actually, like going down that train of thought. You know, like the tall, like fatty, skinny, tall and short.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
you could see. And even the way I think that I can remember the C-3PO, the way he acted or whatever, he was always a bit... I don't know, just in these mannerisms towards R2-D2. Oh yeah, that's interesting. Yeah,
it was like a Laurel and Hardy type sort of a combination. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's All right. Now, look.
So anyway, that was.
That's the sad stuff out of the way.
Yeah, that's sad stuff out of the way.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. Like that was no good. Like about the John English, like, that came out of the blue, didn't it? That was terrible. But
that's right.
Because I
had been sick, but I wasn't sure how sick he was.
No, I think he went in just for an operation, wasn't it? For an aneurysm or something, and then unfortunately didn't quite make it. Now look, I had my last story is about malware, and my second one is about malware. Now this one is the Commonwealth, Westpac, National, and ANZ customers are all at risk from the malware hiding on legitimate banking apps, but on the Android phones. So the malware, it superimposes a fake login screen over the top in order to capture username and passwords. Well, that's pretty nasty, isn't it? Now, that's very nasty. That's right. Look, I've got a little picture there for people who can see. Now, the malware is designed to mimic 20 mobile banking apps from Australia and New Zealand and a random country, like Turkey. What, that's just totally random, isn't it? As well as login screens. That's great. Like, what? We're going to build malware. We're going to target Australia, New Zealand, and Turkey. Yeah.
Maybe they're from Turkey originally.
Maybe.
Maybe that's the connection.
Yes. So, and also the login screens, they replicated mimicked the login screens for PayPal, eBay, Skype, WhatsApp, and a few Google services. So other financial institutions are also in the mix of the hit list, apparently. It's including Bendigo Banks and George Bank, Bank West, ME Bank. I think that's part of NAB, actually. The ASB Bank, Bank of New Zealand, Kiwi Bank, Wells Fargo. I don't know where that is. And then all a bunch of other ones that probably must be Turkish banks. Now, the malware can intercept two-factor authentication sent to the phone via SMS. Jeez, this is a pretty nasty one. Forwarding the code, it forwards the code to the hackers while it's hiding the code from you on the phone. Now, with this access to information, the hacker can bypass the bank security measure to log into your phone from anywhere in the world and transfer funds. Nasty. Now, look, if you go to the show notes and you are on an Android phone, or if you're on an Android phone, you do online banking on it, maybe you should read this show note, and you can find that at the aussietechheads.com.au/podcast. And I think it's a story from the Sydney Morning Herald, so if you can't get any joy out of the show notes, which that you will be able to, but get the original story, and there's a bit of a some sort of a guide on what you can do to maybe get rid of the malware, because there's a little bit involved. Okay.
I think the main thing with that story, Glenn, is really goes to show that you should only get your apps from authorized app stores, because I think that was the only way it was getting onto the phones.
Yes, true. Yes, that's right.
Side loading or something like that. So
yeah, and apparently that was it was obviously tricking people. Was saying, oh, whatever they were browsing or whatever they were doing, it was saying, oh, you need this software to download. So they downloaded it, but unbeknownst to, you know, maybe, you know, computer illiterate people, they're downloading it from a link that's outside of the Play Store, which is no good. But yeah. But yeah, look, this malware, it's bloody crazy. I noticed, though, a lady asked me to fix a little Android tablet the other day, and I saw that the malware bytes, you can download malware bytes on the Android from the Play Store. So that's something good, because I rate malware bytes on the PC, Windows 10, and also there's a free version on the Mac, and so that's good.
Yeah.
Okay, do you use, what the security software are you using, Stuart?
I have used malware bytes before. I don't sort of use it regularly, but at the moment I'm just using the sort of standard stuff that comes with Windows 10. What's it? Windows Defender.
Defender.
And I've got Avast on there as well.
Yeah, I was looking at Avast today, you know, thinking, oh, because I installed it on a machine, and I thought, oh, look, maybe because I got AVG, and yeah, I'm just thinking, look, maybe it might be time for a change, just, you know, spice it up a bit, make something looks better, looks different. But we'll see how we go. Shane, what else have you got for us, please?
What I'll do is I'll do a quick little story that's tech-related but not sort of in the line of what we were talking about. Embrace mining technology innovation, urges Ryan Stokes. So Ryan Stokes is one of the one of Kerry Stokes' sons. One could argue that it's maybe his favourite son, or just is the son that's probably higher up in the organisations than the other son.
Gets all the money.
World class. Just in hierarchy, because like Ryan, I mean, he wasn't when I was working at Westrack, but now he's actually basically high up in the company who owns Westrack.
Right.
Whereas before, yeah, he actually worked for Westrack, fairly high up in the company, and now he's pretty much running the company that runs Westrack. Mm. Anyway, back to the regular program. The world-class breakthroughs in mining technology achieved in Western Australia and their potential broader applications around the world should not be forgotten in the wake of the mining boom, Ryan Stokes says. Mr. Stokes pointed to the progress made by the likes of Rio Tinto, BHP Billiton and Fortescue Metals Group in installing automated trucks and drill rigs across some of the Pilbara iron ore operations as an example of the cutting-edge technology used in the mining industry, comparing the huge automated trucks to the self-driving vehicles being developed by the likes of Google. Now, I kind of disagree with the analogy there, in that with the mining trucks, basically how they kind of work is the mine looks like a certain layout. The way they kind of schedule the movement on the mine is kind of a certain way and can be kind of, what's the word? Kind of be scheduled and kind of factored in. So really how these automated trucks work is it's almost like one of those railway systems that it's not actually a railway system. The trucks can only go from A to B at a certain speed. All other trucks around the mine site can go A to B on a certain speed.
Yep.
So there's less chance of anything kind of happening, whereas with the Google cars, as we've seen, because they're just out in the wild and they've got other factors that can't be controlled in the same way as you can on a mine site, it's, in my opinion anyway, it's not an exact analogy.
Well, we had a story last week when you weren't here about the Google car crashing. And I think hit the bus. And yeah, its problem, it was trying to predict what the bus driver was going to do. Now that's something a human can't do that. So yeah.
No.
But anyway, yeah, sorry, Shane, keep going.
That's all right. Anyway, it just goes on to say that Mr. Stokes, whose Seven Group owns Westrack, which is the company that I used to work for, mining equipment business, said that the growing use of autonomous mining fleets was just one example of how Australian miners were using innovation to improve their cost positions. He's actually got another son. I don't know if he still does, but one of his other sons actually works for WesTrac as well, and but just works in the, well, at the time anyway, just worked in the either the service or the parts department.
Well, I've got, just rolling on from that story there, I've got, because I've got a driverless story as well. Now, this one is from England. A driverless lorry or lorries are to be trialled in the UK. Now, their Department of Transport said that the UK would lead the way in testing driverless HGV platoons. Now, this technology enables vehicles to move in a group, so using less fuel, they reckon. So moving in a group, I'd say that, I suppose, you know, a lot of fuel is wasted. You know, when you look at cars at traffic lights, when they take off and when they stop, they're all going at different speeds and different times. Everyone's braking, accelerating, whatever. So these are all going to be programmed, like, just to all start and gradually pick up speed at the same time. So they're all going to be a little replica down the line. Now, plans could result in platoons of up to 10 computer-controlled lorries being driven metres apart from each other. And it said that the Chancellor, whoever the Chancellor is, was preparing to fund the trials as part of plans to speed up lorry deliveries and cut congestion. Maybe just build a train line. Do it the right way.
I'm back. Sorry about that. But I'm just reading the story here. Cut congestion. Now, if you had a whole stack of lorries together, wouldn't that increase the congestion?
Yep. Well, yes, but they're all moving at the same time.
So, yeah, what about lights?
Well,
Google can't build a car that doesn't bump into a bus at 4 kilometres an hour. I don't fancy a road train of lorries at 100 kilometres an hour not stopping.
No. I was a bit scared of this when I first read it.
I don't think we'll be driving on any freeways in the UK. This comes into force.
Oh, no. Look, this
sounds like...
Yeah, sorry, Stuart.
Sounds like a scene from Mad Max, actually.
Yeah. It does a little bit. If it isn't a scene from the Mad Max, it won't be long until it is.
Yeah, look, at the moment, they're only on supervised tracks or something, so they're not out in the wild as yet. But yeah, but I'll
tell
you.
I'm with you, Glenn. If you're going to have a whole bunch of trolleys metres apart, build a train line.
Yeah, that's right. Like, it'd be probably more economical at the end of the day.
Big freight line. The funny thing is, the rail systems throughout Europe are fantastic. Why don't they make the most of it? They are fantastic, the rail, compared to Australia, my God. Rail systems are great. Yeah. Why would you stay on the road?
It's a really fascinating idea, though, because it's a bit like a cycling peloton, and how you get all those sort of efficiencies by everyone moving together in a group.
That's right.
It's very interesting.
You've got the slipstream, and I can understand the aerodynamics of it. I think that's all accurate, but... In an accurate, and it will work, and it's proven to work in the real world, but without a driver, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, but we'll soon find out. But yeah, build a train. Build some steam trains. Get some coal into them. Burn some coal.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. All the greenies will be protesting.
Prop up the Queensland economy.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Some coal.
Well, what's worse, coal or oil? Who knows? Anyway, Eric, what else
have you... According to the people that want to go back to the dark ages, it's all as bad as one another.
That's right. What have you got? You've got a story.
We've got an iPhone 7.
Yes, talking about going back to the dark ages.
Yeah, dark exactly. How's this for a dark age? While the iPhone 7 is not expected to launch until September, which is normal because it's always in September, French leaker Steve Hammerstoffer has shared photos of one of the first cases prepared for Apple's next-generation flagship smartphone. The case has a larger cutout for either a traditional camera and LED flash setup or possibly dual cameras. I think it's the dual cameras I'm going with. I don't think Apple... When you're putting a flash on an iPhone, your battery will be gone in about 10 minutes. Yes. There are also two openings for stereo speakers in lieu of a 3.5mm headphone jack. So...
Yeah, I don't mind... What are your objections to a headphone jack not having one?
Well, they're going to have wireless headsets.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Well, number one, it's always Apple's way of boosting their revenue. We're going to build an iPhone. Oh, by the way, those headsets don't work anymore. You have to buy these for $99.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
And then it's got the Bluetooth or the Wi-Fi within the phone. Oh, well, yeah, you need the headset, but if you want to activate the phone Wi-Fi, you have to pay an extra, you know. It's a very sneaky way of Apple making more money.
Because I know.
Because then everyone has to. Everyone, let's put it this way, right? They're going to sell, the headsets aren't going to be cheap. These normal ones are $45, right? Now, if they buy, if they invent something proprietary, well, you're not, it's going to be pretty hard to get them off eBay and for them to work properly, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Especially initially.
Yeah.
Now, secondly, how many iPhones do they, how many iPhones do they sell in a year? Oh, quite a bit, don't they?
Millions.
Right. Well, let's just work on simple figures. Let's just say they sell a million iPhones, and everyone has to buy $99 headsets. That's $99 million.
So you're saying that
just on head.
So you're
just
saying
on headsets.
Yeah. So you're saying that you can foresee that the phone's not going to come with a earplugs.
No, I don't think it will come with a headset. Or if it does, it'll be built into the price of the phone. So suddenly the phone, they're already $1,200 now. You can buy a laptop for that.
Yeah.
The phone will now be $1,500.
But on the surface, I don't mind the idea. Like, because I know every time I go for a walk or something, you know, you put your phone in the pocket and earplugs in. It's too short. The lead's too short.
Too short or too long.
No, it's too short. Way
or
too
it gets
short.
Caught somewhere. Look, that's right. I get all the logistics of it, and I don't disagree with you, but I'm skeptical of the way Apple's going to do it more than the concept itself.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I just think they're sneaky. Look, for example, the classic case, right? Surface Book and the Surface Pro 4. You buy one, pen comes with it.
Yeah.
Or if it doesn't come with it, my pen didn't come with it, but it wasn't expensive to add it on.
Mm.
You buy an iPad, oh, sorry, the pen's $160. Are you
That's
kidding me?
That's a lot, isn't it? That's a lot.
I'm going to buy a pen company for that.
Yeah.
You know, $160. Oh, I'm buying an iPad that works with a pen. Oh, you're going to have to buy the pen as well. Well, and they're going to do the same thing with this.
Mm.
They're going to do the same thing. And that's what I don't like about it.
Mm. Fair enough.
But having said that, I listen to all of my podcasts with a little Bluetooth earphone sort of thing. So it's only in one ear.
Yeah.
It's very small. And of course, it's wireless. And it's fantastic because it's just doesn't take up any space. It doesn't feel like you've got anything in your ear at all.
Well, I think that's what everyone will probably end up doing.
It's great for podcasts, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's probably what people will end up doing because it's got the Bluetooth on it already. And they can't suddenly chop that off and say, oh, we won't give you Bluetooth because we want you to buy the headset. They won't do that. No one will buy their phone because people need the Bluetooth to pair it with their cars, et cetera, et cetera. So I think most people end up doing that.
So, Stuart, with that little Bluetooth, that like the little just the, you know, the calling Bluetooth thing that people put in their ear? Like you can
But it's very small though, so it doesn't sort of stick out in that sort of ugly way that the old ones used to.
Oh yeah,
it's only a cheap thing that I just get from eBay. It comes straight from China. It's only about $7 or $8 or something like that. It's pretty cheap, but it works. It's great for podcasts. I wouldn't listen to music with it, but for podcasts, it's great.
Well, I might have to look into one of those because when I go for a walk, I always keep one ear out anyway, so I can hear cars.
Yeah. Yeah, it's perfect.
Well, the only thing with the Bluetooth is the radiation is a lot greater on a Bluetooth headset than it is on a wireless infrared or whatever they're going to use here. That's the only thing. Mm. And it does burn through your battery a lot faster.
Mm. So I have a question, Stuart. Since you're in a band, would that sort of technology, Bluetooth headset technology, be high enough quality for using it for like fallback when you're actually playing on stage and that sort of thing?
No, it's not because there's just that bit of a lag.
Yep.
Because the Bluetooth is not as instant as a cabled connection. So
fixed connections are much better.
I suppose it's
there's a lot of singers now that use those remote mics, don't they? I don't know. Are they any good?
I haven't used one before, so
I haven't. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've used.
I think it's the microphone that's the problem. It's the feedback that the the singer or the person playing the instrument actually needs. Like I know with playing drums, I needed to kind of hear the rest of the band so I could actually obviously keep the time for them. Whereas I was just wondering whether something like that would actually be good enough, but I guess because of the latency, it would be even more of an issue, me being a drummer kind of thing.
Well, and I think the sound quality isn't as good either. And if you can't get the proper tune, you'll end up playing out of tune or singing out of tune.
I think anything, any sound that has to go through a computer has to be processed, and no matter how fast it is, you're always going to get that little, like, tiny millisecond of delay. Like, even I've got this audio interface now that goes into the Mac here to record, and it's all done with FireWire, and you'd think that that's going to be the fastest you're going to get, but you still get that. It just sounds like a little echo, and it's just not as sweet as just a direct cable.
Yeah.
All right, Stuart, what are you up to? I think you've got some more.
Yeah, no, just I was going to talk about Lumino City. I don't know if you've heard of that before, but it's a game that's out on the iPhone and the iPad. It's not brand new. It's been out for a few months, but the reason why I was bringing it up was because for the first time it's just gone on sale, and because originally it's normally $7.99, so it's quite expensive for an iPhone game these days, and it's down to $2.99 at the moment, which is the first time it's been on sale. But the reason why I was picking out this particular game was the way it was made was really interesting, and they actually won the BAFTA last year for artistic achievement.
Wow.
So the way that they did it, it's a kind of a puzzle game that's set in this fictional city called Lumino City, but they physically made a model of the city using cardboard and paper and so on, and super detailed city. And to make the game, they just had lots of cameras around this really big model of the city, and moved the cameras around different locations and used different lighting and things like that. So when you play the game, you're watching real footage. It's not CGI or anything. It's actually a real model.
Like the old style, like they did the first Star Wars, basically.
Yeah, like I guess it's a bit like a stop motion animation, to a certain extent. And it just has a different look to something that's just been completely computer generated. And it's just a really interesting game. And it won a BAFTA last year. I'd been waiting for it to finally drop in price, and it just dropped this week. So that's something to have a look at.
Mm. Yeah, well, I just flashing a video up of that now, of the trailer, for everyone that's watching this on the YouTubes. Probably another takedown, and so it does look quite intricate, very different, doesn't it? Yes, like, I know you guys, like Eric and Stuart and Shane, you can't see it, but yeah, it's very good, isn't it?
There's a very interesting behind the scenes video of how they shot it, and it was very involved.
Right, so you play this one, Stuart?
I just picked it up yesterday, so I only played a bit of it through, and it's great. It's got really interesting puzzles, very sort of got a real sort of tactile feel to them, because they're filming a real thing. It does have a real sort of tactile aspect to it.
And what's the object of the game?
You have to rescue your grandfather who's been lost in this city somewhere. So it's trying to unlock certain doors and get through this area and get through that area and gradually find him. But all the puzzles that I've played so far, they're all very, very different, very unique. So it's things you probably haven't seen before.
Now this this video that I'm playing here on the Lumino City official trailer, I'm sure this is the right one, but it's 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's fairly old sort of a game.
Well, at first it came out about 18 months ago, I think, in for PC.
Oh, yes.
And it only came on iPhone and iPad about 5 months ago. So right. It's fairly new for iOS.
Yeah, right. Good stuff. Oh, I'll have to have a look at that. So Lumino City, down $2.99. All right. So you can get it on your iPhone. Yeah, cool. All right.
And iPad, yep.
And iPad. All right, now let me scroll back up to the top because I'll have another one. Oh, how's this? I was looking through some stories today. This is just a little quickie. But, Toshiba, they've got this robot, and it's so human-like. Now, I'll get a little photo that I can show. Oh, you guys can see the photos in the show notes anyway. But,
I've got it.
Yep. Yeah, so this robot, it's a girl, it's a lady, probably Japanese lady. She's designed to look as human as possible. She's just recently had German language added to her repertoire. Now, she's had an upgraded machine control system make the movements smoother. It's strange, isn't it? Because like when I'm reading this story, it refers to it as an it, which it is. But when you're looking at her, you want to keep referring to it as her. Yeah, so now this professor, blah blah. I'm sure she doesn't get tongue tied like that either. Now Professor Noel Sharkey, that's a name and a half. Noel Sharkey, a roboticist at the University of Sheffield, said that he thought machine still fell. Clearly on this side of the uncanny valley. Now, if you're like me and you're thinking, what the hell is an uncanny valley? The term refers to the fact that many people feel increasingly uncomfortable the closer a robot gets to appearing like a human being, so long as the two remain distinguishable. Yeah, so it would be creepy. And apparently this robot has just come out of Japan for the first time, so it's some big deal or something. But oh look, it's reminds me of the old Doctor Who episode, the Android Invasion. You know, they just look human, their face falls off, and yeah, creepy stuff. maybe I got a bit of uncanny valley going on.
And sounds a bit rude, mate.
Well, that's why Honda, when they were because Honda of course have been making robots for a long time, and they try and make sure that they are not that they don't look like humans, I think, so they don't put people off, and so they're definitely shorter than humans and things like that, and so people don't get worried about them.
So they don't get uncanny valley-isms.
Yeah, that's right.
all right, Shano, what else have you got, please?
I will do a story about the story that just keeps on keeping on, the Apple versus FBI story.
Oh, there's a couple. Still going.
There's a couple of other people that have kind of come out of the woodwork and put their 2 cents worth in. And I don't know whether you want me to quote Snowden directly.
You may.
Well, that's all right. You're not breaking any laws. As long as you quote him, and it's all right.
All right. No, it's just that he described it rather colourfully. That's all. The FBI says that...
Use your imagination. Yeah. Replace those words with truck.
I know, it's not that colourful. Anywho. The FBI says that the only Apple can create... The FBI says that only Apple can deactivate certain passcode protection on the iPhone, which will allow law enforcement to guess the passcode by using brute force. Talking via video link from Moscow at a conference, Snowden said that the FBI says Apple, as the exclusive technical means to unlock the phone, respectfully, that is bullshit, according to Snowden. Microsoft founder Bill Gates has also weighed in on the argument and said in a discussion on Reddit that he thinks that there needs to be a discussion about when the government should be able to gather information. And then goes on to sort of say, what if we had never had wiretapping? Also, the government needs to talk openly about safeguards. So he's kind of falling on the side of the FBI. Snowden's basically just saying that Apple being the only people that can break into the phone is a load of crap. And then Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak has now piped in to the argument as well, saying that also spoke out against the FBI on Conan O'Brien on Monday show, saying that I side with Apple on this one. The FBI picked the lamest case you ever could. And the only other thing that I wanted to kind of throw in the mix at this point is I can't remember exactly what show it was on, but one of the Twitch shows where they were saying that the phone itself has got nothing of interest to the FBI. They just want to use this to set a precedent. So going forward, if they get phones that have something of interest, it's a lot easier to get access to the stuff than it is currently.
Well, it probably will be easier going forward. Like, they're just spewing that this Sam Bendino idiot didn't have a 6S with the fingerprint thing on it. He had a 5, yeah. Didn't he? So
5C.
Yeah, so going forward, probably just, stick his finger on it and you'll get in.
Can't they? Oh, I suppose it needs to be a live finger. I was gonna say, can't they just go through the motions?
Does it have?
I was gonna say,
be...
can't they go through the motions of upgrading to the latest phone, which has got the fingerprint reader, albeit a dead finger, set up the actual fingerprint, then that kind of gets into the phone. That way, if they actually upgrade the phone, upgrade into the latest phone, but I think it actually has to be a live finger.
Right. Right. Okay. I don't know. What's the difference between... Well, you can't have like a six-week-old dead finger. What's the difference between a fresh dead finger and a finger? Still.
Well, I think the phone's smart enough to kind of check for things like pulses and all that kind of stuff as well, just as well as the fingerprint.
Now, here's one. While you're carrying on about fingerprints, do you know they're doing like ear prints or ear drum print things? Now, headphones use ear canals to carry out ID checks. Now, this works by playing...
Oh, come on. This...
Now, well, if you think of it, this is what people, Apple and all this DRM people have been going crazy about. So this works by playing a sound and then checking how it resonates in the wearer's ear canal. This provides a biometric check that serves as an alternative to a fingerprint sensor or eye scanner. Now, NEC, who are the dudes who are doing all this, said it intended to make products using the facility available before the end of 2018, which is not too far away. One expert praised the innovation for offering a fresh alternative to passcodes. Now, but like they go on and say the shape and size of each person's ears are unique. The resulting data could be used to distinguish an individual. But I reckon it's going to be more used. Like, so, you know, when you buy a song, well, that's you can't listen to it unless your ears tell the machine that you can listen to it. That's how you get how they get the DRM going again. Do you reckon?
That's scary. That's just stupid.
But that's where this will want to try and go, don't you think? Like, why not? That's it. If I was Tim Cook, I'd be going, well, we want to protect our music or whatever.
Oh, don't give Cookie Monster any ideas. Good God.
Yeah, well, earplug IDs.
That's ridiculous. Earplugs. What's next? Oh, we'll have it on the iPhone. We'll have a DNA check on it. Hang on, let me just pull the hair out. Yeah, that's mine. Yeah. Oh, the phone open. Oh, I can read my emails now. Hang on.
Run it through like a blood sampler or something.
Yeah. CSI iPhone. Give me a break.
Yes. Eric, what other story have you got? Have you got any more?
Let me see. What do I have?
You got a Google test app.
Oh, look, this is a bit weird. Don't know. You just explain to me this, someone, please. Google has announced that it is testing a payment program called Hands Free that lets users pay for goods without having to reach into their pockets.
Oh, God, I hate doing that.
Yeah, the idea behind the program is that anyone can walk into a store, find what they want, head to the register, requiring only their face and a moment's conversation to purchase something.
Yeah, right.
So it must be, voice activated and something, right?
Yeah.
Hands-free is a limited pilot program at select stores in the Silicon Valley area. Where else?
Yeah.
Google said that it uses a variety of sensors in a user's smartphone, including Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, to detect when shoppers are in a particular store. This is too much for me.
Yeah, that's out there.
It's just completely just, what are they going to think of there? When at the cash register, they usually simply have to say, I'll pay with Google, and give their initials to the cashier. The store employee checks the initials and a picture that the users have uploaded to their payment accounts to verify that who they are. Well, where are they going to get the picture from? You've got to show their phone, which means you've just reached into your pocket.
This is just another one of those.
Which means that this store is stupid.
Yeah, this is another one of those Google things that will just end
stupid
up
stupid Google things. On the rubbish tip. Let me tell you something. It's not NFC, right? And it's which is basically close quarters like PayPass or things like that, right? So this, it's going to communicate with your smartphone through a Bluetooth and/or Wi-Fi. Now, geez, I wonder if anyone can hack those signals, right? And just get your payment details. Oh, money's not going to the storekeeper; it's gone to my account. Oh, too bad.
Yeah, but I mean, like, how lazy do we want to be? Like, I thought, you can't put your hand in your pocket now.
Hang on a minute. I'm going to the store. Hang on a minute. Get the phone out. Oh,
yeah, I know. Heart rate increase.
I need to sit down. I need to get a drink.
Yeah, crazy.
I have to go back to the shop and get a drink and pull my phone out again. Oh.
All right, Stuart, have you got any more this week? Illumino City, blah, blah, blah. Yes, you have.
Yeah, just something new from Google, since we're talking about Google, is destinations on Google. It's a planning tool for your mobile phone. I did try it on the desktop. Doesn't work on that. It's definitely a mobile phone sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you type in a place that you want to go to. So if you're going to Paris, you type in the Google search, you type in Paris and then either the word destination or vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And then Google brings together lots of facts about that destination, places to stay, flights, works out itineraries for you, and just brings all these things together in one spot. And you can plan when the sort of cheapest time of the year is to go and things like that.
That's pretty cool.
Brings it all together.
Yeah. So it also filters, lets you customize hotel class, number of travelers, and a heap more. Plan a trip tab, highs and lows. Cool. So that's just on Google on iPhone, Android, just mobile. You think?
Yeah. Well, I used the Chrome browser on the iPhone. It worked.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, it's good.
Oh, nice.
That's a pretty good idea. But I don't know if I'd like to plan my trip on my iPhone.
Why not?
I like a big screen, you know, because you've got spreadsheets. You go, well, that trip there, that's how much it's going to cost. Yeah, that's where I'm staying. You know, I can't do all that on this.
Yeah. Well, you could.
I think it's good for, for the itineraries, because it also has, like, walking tours and things like that. So that if you just go into a place,
if you're already in Paris, you go, right, walking tour Paris, and you go, bang, 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 perfect.
That's right.
I think to plan your whole trip on this, I think might be a little bit difficult.
Right. Well, it shows things like our restaurants as well. So yeah, it's good once you're there, probably.
Yeah, look, I'm gonna have a look at that. That looks pretty good. Type in Gold Coast, see where I can go. Shane.
It'll tell you to bring your bulletproof vest, mate, every single location.
Gold Coast, not that bad. You see that guy on Facebook who put a post up and said something about he wanted to go and kill Donald Trump. And
What a dick.
Yeah, and so anyway, so the feds come around to his house and said, hey, going to cancel your visa, sunshine? You're out of here.
Oh, suck.
Yeah. And apparently he's in jail, and he's got till the 15th of July or something to leave voluntarily. So he put up...
Where was this bloke from?
Egypt.
In America.
He was an Egyptian. And
that's going to get your credit points.
Yeah, and he was saying something about... I don't know what he actually posted, but it was something about going to kill Donald Trump and do the world a favor or something like that. And then when he gets caught, and everything, he goes, "Oh, I didn't mean. I was never going to hurt anyone." I mean, well,
look, I'm sure there are a lot of people in the last 3 months that have said exactly the same thing, but they probably haven't posted it on Facebook or anything like that.
You can't. It's a bit stupid. The posts and stuff on Facebook, especially about topics like that, are getting really sensitive, and
You do. Yeah, absolutely.
Like if you went out into the town square and you bellowed it from the top of your lungs, we're probably going to get in the same trouble.
You're right. Well, see, the thing is, that's the problem with social media. You've all got these keyboard warriors, right? They're all behind the screen. They're all very brave, and they think they can say whatever they want. Well, everyone's cracking down on that now, because if you write anything on Facebook, for example, that says, Tony Abbott's an effing liar and a freaking bully, right?
Yeah,
and without putting in my opinion,
yes.
Because if it's your opinion, it's fine because it's just your opinion. But if you say something like that and you're trying to pass it off as fact, you're in the courts.
Yeah,
straight up, that's libel.
Yeah. Well, what about unsourced rumors and put them in a book? Well, that's a different story.
Oh well, let's not go there. Well, She's got a couple of she'll have a few QC bills coming her way, don't worry.
Oh, do you reckon? Yeah. Do you reckon that's gonna go off?
Yeah,
yep, right.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's,
right.
She's a goner.
I heard her on a radio show, I'm not sure who the compere was, but he just asked her a straight question, said, "Well, who said this?" And she goes, "I'm not telling." He goes, "Okay, who said this? I'm not telling. Who said this? I'm not telling."
No one said it.
Yeah, who knows?
See, there's a backstory to her. She's a mean little piece of thing, right? According to other people, not me.
In your opinion.
Apparently, not in my opinion, according to other people's opinion, so they don't get me. Apparently, she wanted the chief of staff job that Tony Abbott gave to Peter Credlin, right? Ever since then, she's had the hate on him for not giving her the job and the hate on her for getting the job.
Oh,
and all of a sudden, she writes this book.
Sent the haters out.
You know.
Good.
Yeah. Everyone loves to hate Tony Abbott.
Now, who else has got another story? I got one more. Anyone else? There are you.
I got one more.
All right, go, Shane.
All right, Google ordered to hand over names of fake reviewers in Dutch court case. Fake reviews have been an occasional and frustrating byproduct of sites like Google Yelp and Amazon for years. A nursery in Amsterdam, so big company, has won a case against Google and a civil court in the city this month, in which Google was not only forced to take down several negative fake reviews that appeared on Google sites, but also disclosed the details such as IP addresses of the people who posted the reviews in the first place. The lawyer of the nursery, Paul Tijami, I think it is, of Simmons & Simmons, believes that this is the first time that the search giant has ever been forced by a court to reveal contact and registration details of fake reviewers. Google so far has no comment on the case. We've received the ruling and are reviewing it, but nothing else to share at this time, a spokesperson told TechCrunch in an email. While the case appears to be the landmark ruling, it's the first time that Google has been required to provide contact details and IP addresses for Google reviewers. It also highlights the challenges for search platforms like Google when navigating questions of freedom of speech and more recent developments that touch on users' privacy.
So how do they know, to start with, point A, how do they people know that it is initially a fake review? Like, they obviously don't know it's fake because they're asking Google for IP and addresses of people who posted it. So do they have to, are they alleging that this is fake? So then they want to get, say, private information to prove that it's fake. Like,
I don't think it's fake in the way that it's been posted by like a robot. I think it's fake in that someone's written something about a restaurant or a hotel that they've never actually eaten at or stayed at.
Right, right. Well, but why would people bother doing that? Get paid to do it or something? Owns a hotel down the road. Paid. Yeah, right.
They get paid.
Yeah, well, look, I don't know. Like, it's obviously be a frustrating thing, you know, owning a business getting all these fake negative reviews because your competition don't like you. So what do
well,
you...
Well, that could happen too. They might pay the competition to write negative reviews about the competition.
Yeah, but I don't know. You know? But I suppose, look, I don't know. That's a tricky one, isn't it? Like, because, like, you know, you pick up a book. What's that travel book? Is it Weary?
Lonely Planet
or something? Yeah, isn't there reviews in that? Or some sort of reviews or suggestions of where...
Yeah, but Lonely Planet's pretty reputable. They've been around a very long time. I don't think they'd be doing anything stupid or else they wouldn't be around.
Because I know, like...
I think they're fairly reputable.
Because I know if I look at a page or if I'm looking at, say, I don't know, say I want to buy some program or something on the internet and you think, oh, should I buy it? Should I not buy it? Or whatever. And you start looking at the reviews and then you start seeing some negative reviews. You just go, well, no, I'm not going to get it because of that. But... there's also positive reviews as well. So I think you've got to read...
I try to weigh them up. I usually make sure that it's the positive reviews outweigh the negatives.
I think the other thing that isn't in my notes, but this is a nursery, so it wasn't just reviews about saying the plants are all good or the plants are all dead. There were some reviews in there that touched on things about staff, and apparently there's young people working there. And it was going into areas like child abuse and alleging that sort of behaviour amongst these reviews. So I think that's where they've kind of got a bit upset.
Mm. Yeah, that's definitely the competition or some jealous.
Yeah. And I think, Stuart, you've just got one more.
Just a quick one. Fresco News in the US teams with Fox stations for crowdsourced coverage. So this is basically where the general public send in their photos and videos of breaking news in their area. And if they get picked up, then you get $50 for a video and $20 for a photo.
That's all right.
So
that's
Fresco...
that's very cheap programming, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a very cheap program because, you know, if they had to send out a crew, it cost them thousands. They say, oh, you do it, we'll give you $50. They're making a fortune.
Mm. Yeah, and it's, you know, with the, like, with the current state of the smartphone video cameras these days, they shoot some really good video.
Yeah.
What are the paparazzi going to do now? They're going to be out of business.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it's a really interesting direction where
it's Uber. It's paparazzi Uber.
Yeah, but it's not just like seeing Twitter or something like that. It's apparently it's still a curated feed. So, you know, so they try and weed out the rubbish and so on. So
you still have to get through the editorial process and the fact checking, because people are going to start setting up. Let's set this up to make it look like a crime.
Yes.
You know, someone getting their heads punched in, or someone breaking into a store, someone stealing a car, and you're sending in as news, and it's just you and your mate setting up a sting.
Well, I think it's this part of that story here that probably says it all. It says television stations in 11 cities will be able to send out location-based alerts through the Fresco iOS app in the hopes of getting first-person coverage. So maybe, you know, they get a phone tip off saying that this something's going down. Yeah, sending all these people into trouble. Yeah. So they put this alert out. Everyone just converges looking for $50. Let's send
$50. You get a dollar each.
So that's interesting. That's interesting. Look, I might put that down. Is it over here yet? Back in Apple.
I think it's just the US, I think.
It's
just talking about the US, but it'll come here, I'm sure.
Yeah, you can always just have it on your phone just in case, because you don't know when you're going to just be having your camera out and filming something that's just going to happen. You know,
I think you'll find that most of the news websites, in a lot of the stories, it says send your pictures and videos to, and they send you an email address. They don't pay you.
Mm.
They just want you, you know, if you see something and, you know, blah, 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 and think suddenly it's newsworthy. So if you go to 9MSN, for example, and it's such a tabloid website now that you can tell which ones have been sent in by people. Most of it is just stuff that people have sent in. It's not stuff they've covered.
Oh, I'm getting
right? They're doing it now, but they're doing it on the cheap.
Yeah.
So the other one that Stuart's talking about is probably a more professional version. They've got to edit out and weed out the rubbish and whatnot, and you get a proper, you know, like, girl surprises man who raised her with hidden adoption papers. You know, they just grab that straight off YouTube.
Yeah. I don't know. Are you getting increasingly sick of just the rubbish that you got to read in the news?
Like, it's rubbish. It's not news anymore.
It's gossip.
It's just rubbish.
It's gossip.
It's gossip and just
rubbish.
You know, innuendo and... Yeah. You know, today I was at the service station today, and you know those stupid women's magazines, girls' magazines, and they're right there, right?
Yeah.
And there's one with, I can't remember which one it was, and it had Nicole Kidman on it. You know, Nicole's wrapped. It's a boy. You know, like she's not even pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. Whose boy was it?
Actually, last week she said somewhere in some tabloid rag, "That's it. I've had it with kids." And then this week, it's a boy.
Yeah.
Come off it.
Yeah, it's just so much waste of time. And
it's just rubbish. It's just rubbish.
I was flicking through the TV last night, and I can't remember, but I know I commented on it because I stopped on it. It was the Kardashian show.
Please.
And I stopped there for like 30 seconds, just enough time, unfortunately, to hear what was going on. But it was something that was just rubbish. It was just absolute rubbish. But anyway, I forget what it was.
Oh, that's a rubbish show. I don't even.
Yeah,
it's just rubbish.
Yeah. Anyway, last one. Skype ditches support for smart TVs. Well, I don't know if this is a good move or not. I don't know. But the move reflected, apparently, public preference for using mobile devices to make video calls from the living room. Whatever. How would they know? Are they watching everyone's calls? Where they're making them from? Despite the average size. Yeah, so anyway, so it will continue to maintain the service until June. Afterwards, it will be up to the individual manufacturers of the TVs to decide whether or not, you know, they want to support, put an unsupported app on their device. Skype TV was first unveiled at CES Tech Show in January 2010 and was marketed as a way to let families share the limelight. So from their lounge room. So there's no more huddling around the computer.
Let me show you around my house, so you got to pick up the TV.
Yeah, well, in that case, you're not going to do it like that, are you? But, I mean, look, my comments on this was, is like, it's introduced at CES in 2010. So what that means, what, take another 12 months before it to get mainstream? So say 2011, and they're canning it already? So how...
Yeah, but tell me, would you use it? Would you use Skype on TV? I know I wouldn't.
Well, I don't even have a smart TV. I haven't even had a chance to use it.
Me neither, but could you imagine the sound quality? I'm sitting 4 meters away from the TV. What? Speak up, I can't hear you. No, be here, it'd be terrible.
I never thought of that. That would be a negative. Yeah, that would be a negative. But I just don't think they've given it long enough, because not everyone's got a smart TV. And I just think, you know, like, is it just too early to throw in the towel? Like, how much does it cost to maintain it, really?
Oh, look, I figure no one's buying it and they shouldn't be selling it.
Yeah. So does that mean that they're also not going to support it in their own products? Like, because it's part of Xbox 360 and Xbox One.
That's right.
And I know you can get it on... I don't know if you can get it on the Apple TV.
I don't use Skype on any of those.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
Never used it.
But anyway, that's what's going on. So that's all we've got for you for this week. How good's that? There was quite a few stories there this week, wasn't there? You can...
Yes.
Yes. Now, don't forget, you can jump on the Twitter. You can follow the Twitter feed. Not that there's much going on, but maybe you can help that. That's Aussie Tech Heads. And if you want to use a hashtag, let's do it. Let's do hashtags, eh? Let's go hashtag Aussie Tech Heads. It's an easy to remember. Don't forget the Aussie Mac Zone, the Obsidian Loft, Old Fart Geeks, and Aussie Tech Security. And also don't dare forget the TuneIn Radio and search for Aussie Tech Radio. All right, good stuff. If you want to email us, you can email us, whatever our name is, at aussietechheads.com.au. It'll find its way there. And, yeah, we'll see what you've got to say. Give us some feedback. All right. Thanks, Eric. Thanks for coming in. And we'll see
you... No problem. Thank you, sir.
Next week. Shane, we'll see you next week. And
Yeah, barring any other bugs or whatever.
Right. Hope it doesn't spread to your arms or whatever.
That's or your other. Apparently
south of the equator.
Apparently... It only attacks the legs, so yeah. So good. The only thing it'll happen is it'll just jump back to the left one.
You're not reckon you're not what's that three-legged guy?
What? Jake the Pig.
Rolf. Oh, Rolf! What's happened to Rolf? He's still in the can. He's looking at more charges. Oh, Rolf.
Why not?
Oh, tell you.
Now I understand what that song was about.
Well, that's yeah, right. Well, why wouldn't you write a I don't know, you'd be not in a nice frame of, you wouldn't feel like writing a happy song, would you? All right, and thanks, Stuart, as well, for coming in and giving us your story for the week. All right, good stuff. So I hope you enjoyed this week's show. We'll be back next week, as usual, for another episode of Aussie Tech Heads. We'll see you then. Be good. Bye-bye.
Aussie Tech Head is produced by The Secret Hub and recorded on the Gold Coast, Australia. Please visit our website and take part in our discussions forums at www.aussietechhead.com. Views expressed in the preceding audio do not necessarily represent those of Aussie Tech Head on the Secret Hub. Thank you for downloading, and we'll see you next episode. Bye for now.